I have like the first hoodie that LTT ever made still. I don't wear it anymore, but I've been tempted to just like put it on and see if people notice. I haven't worn it in a long time. It's the original version of this hoodie. Like it says Linus Tech Tips really big in the hood.
How does it feel that people are noticing your wardrobe?
I like that because it's stuff like this. It means that there are people like me in our audience, which makes me
happy. You dig that. Yeah. You feel vindicated a little bit.
I do. I'm like, oh, there's like tech people. There's people who are like, I will spend like $80 or however much this was on a hoodie. They're like, yes, I like that guy. It's a good hoodie. It's my favorite hoodie. Well, the other one is, but...
Well, gents, we are going here, so...
All right.
Or we can banter a little bit more, so...
About my wardrobe.
We have scheduled banter.
Give the audio.
They notice my wardrobe.
They don't need to know it's scheduled.
But they say my hair is fake, so...
Is that a real LTT hoodie, or is that a knockoff?
It's more real than my hair. No, I'm just kidding. I have real hair. This is real. I'm sorry you don't like it.
I would hate to see what if they say that about your hair, I would hate to see what they would have to say about
it. I want
to
know where it came from. Like, who?
I don't know.
Why? What made them say my hair was a wig? Is it because it's so fantastic? I don't think it's that.
You're such a good sport about it, though.
Nah, what do I care if somebody on the internet says I have a wig?
I would lose sleep.
People have said that my muscles are fake because they were so impressive.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe that it wasn't
Doug's
right.
Got anchor arms from SpongeBob over here just like blowing him up.
Nobody's ever said that.
Are we actually doing our warm-up lap now?
Is this it? Is this the fodder that Doug had scheduled to talk about his muscles?
You can leave it in, but...
No, let's hype Doug up. Doug, remember when you could dunk?
8 years ago, I think, was the last attempt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I could. All 5'8" and change.
That's impressive. You got some hops.
Extra
some
medium
leaves.
Self.
Mm-hmm.
Getting up there.
Some real chutzpah.
Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. We haven't lost our minds. We still have a scheduled show. This is just some of the bonus pre-show banter. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, who has real hair. And a real LTT hoodie.
It's all real.
Some people wish his, was it your beard experiment?
Oh, yeah, my failed beard experiment.
Some people maybe wish that wasn't 100%. Real, but it is.
That's all right.
Ethan Huffnagel, our executive assistant to the regional producer.
Who does have a wig.
If you enjoy this podcast, please help us out with the algorithms. Like, share, subscribe. Give a 5-star review. Everything helps other people to see it because that's how technology works. Just ask Ethan. All right, for our warm-up lap, the bonus for audio listeners only, where we get our tires warm and the fluids flowing and everything like that so we can go into full race pace later.
Nice. That was pretty slick. Did you plan that out?
No, I didn't.
Nice.
No, I didn't.
Should write that down for later.
I had to be careful when I was talking about fluids. And anyway, we talked about the engine swaps, like the EV swap versus the Renegade swap 911 Targa. And we came to the conclusion because of the high bid of the 74 911 Targa with a Tesla motor in it, that it was not worth it to swap. I mean, it's never worth it because the investment cost or sunk cost is way, way more. But
for sure,
a stock 2.7S Targa is like 50 to 60 grand. And the high bid on the EV swap was 52. So it's like, oh, an original one is worth more. Well, since then, the car sold in Deal Tank on P-Car Market for 64. So that means an EV conversion 911 Targa, well, 2.7S anyway, is worth slightly more than an original one.
There was a lot of other stuff done to this, though. Like, it was kind of vaguely restored.
Yeah, I mean,
restored,
somebody spent $150,000 to get 60 back.
It's not like this is a normal, like, Survivor, like, Targa with 80 to 100,000 miles on it. Like, this was done up, so.
And I think they did the right thing, is they took the least desirable, most unloved car and said, okay, we'll do it to that.
Yeah.
They didn't take a 69 911S soft window Targa and go, we're going to put an electric motor in it. That would have been.
Who's going to do the first EV? The EV swap 996. Get them
there might be
electric
one.
Eggies.
Have you
out
have
there?
You not? Electric eggs.
Electric eggs.
Let's see. We got Bailey Walton, friend of the podcast, car guy extraordinaire. We all got his Christmas card the other day. For those of you listening, we do not pre-record that far in advance, right? If you're hearing this in January, we filmed it in late January. It was a wonderful Christmas card. It was very like L.L. Bean / what's that New England clothing company that he's a big fan of? The guy with the Land Rover, and he's very just, he epitomizes just patriarchal, upper class New England-ism. Patriarchal might be the wrong
Keel James
word.
Patrick.
Yeah. There I always is. Think of Key and Peele. I'm like, no, it's not that.
Oh my God, this photo on the website in like an SL convertible with balloon. Oh, they're just vibing in New England. Love
yes.
it. Dogs.
But he's got the plaid luggage, dogs, logs. I don't even know if Bailey has a real fireplace, but this is a wonderful, wonderful Christmas card. But it didn't get lost in the mail. He sent it in late January. And it says Happy Holidays 2024.
Look, I got to be honest. They went through the time to have them printed up. Send them out anyway. The people need to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than I did. I didn't send one. But yes, Bailey is the type of person, if you don't know him, Bailey is the type of person who has hat boxes. And he's a male.
Yeah.
And we love him for all of these things. We've been getting a fair amount of negative feedback at Switch Cars lately, emails, comments on videos, etc. And it's all from people who haven't done business with us.
Oh, is this the part of fame where people just start hating you because you like have? Oh,
no, it's people who tried, but they didn't like our offer or they weren't ready to do a deal or whatever. And all of this became our fault, right? Like their feedback is, Switch Cars lowballed me. And I'm like, maybe. Or maybe you wanted retail for your trade-in, like.
But you can make money on the other car, Doug, right?
Isn't not that at that the works? Price they were offering for that either. there's one deal that, I think we offered him 170 for his Ferrari, and it was we probably should have offered 180, but whatever. It wasn't one that we were particularly excited about, and we were asking 225 for the car that he wanted to buy. And I think he was trying to be at like a basically an even swap.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
That's a whole 997 in there.
Right. We were like 50K apart. And I'm like, I think 10 of that was us lowballing and the other 40 was him being completely unrealistic. But he hated on us anyway. Yes. More and more vehicles are getting stolen by transporters. I keep getting messages about this happening. If you have had one stolen or you know somebody who has, you've heard about one on the internet, please, we're doing a big research project on this topic for a special hour-long podcast and some other things. But if you would reach out to us through the podcast site, switchcast.live, that would be great. Same thing, if you know somebody, tell them to reach out to us. It's some big things in the works there, not just a podcast episode. But, with that, I think the car's warmed up.
Let's go.
It's up to operating temperature. 150 degrees oil temp. Tyler and I have had many debates, typically long after the podcast is over and we're a couple or few bourbons deep.
I find a lot of these discussions are better that way because we're a little more socially lubricated. We can kind of be a little bit more honest and say some things. But we thought we should maybe record it this time.
Right. So the big one is, should you finance a car?
This is not financial advice. None of what we're talking about is financial
advice. Well, it is. It's not investment advice, right? Yeah, it's not licensed financial. Whatever. No, it's opinions. This may sound like a rhetorical question, right? Because our culture says, why not? What's the other option? Why wouldn't you? That's how people do things. But I'm from the Dave Ramsey, Larry Burkett school of thought. Tyler is, what's your saying? PenFed is my...
Oh, yeah. All hail PenFed. Let's go. PenFed is my Lord and Savior.
PenFed, for those of you who don't know, is Pentagon Federal Credit Union. They're an online credit union who offers very competitive rates. This is not an endorsement.
No. It's competitive rates, and they will give you a loan on an old car.
Right. So we see their checks come in a lot to the dealership, and we enjoy working with them, and they're great for our customers. However, my personal opinion differs from Tyler's. And, of course, Ethan has been asking. I think this all comes down. Our producer, Ethan, has been asking about, like, buying a sports car. We've been trying to get him into cars. And so, like, there's this big existential struggle of, like, should he keep his Nissan Murano, which is paid off, or should he go deeply into debt for the a museum-quality Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet?
Oh, well, the answer is yes. Or we can get some more whiskey, get some Sawzalls, and just make him one.
That'd be great. A cross cab conversion.
Yeah, dude. Oh my god. Yeah. You put enough whiskey in us, so anything. There we go.
C4 cross cabriolet. No, never mind. Cab cross cab. Never mind.
You're
okay,
good.
Okay, that didn't work. Cab stands for cabriolet. So,
did you think it stood for taxi cab?
Shut up. Financial advisors often say, and I've heard this from, that you shouldn't pay cash for a depreciating asset, which to me is the most nonsensical advice on the planet. Because
are they, what I think is weird about that, and I'm sure you're going to cover some of this, is you are paying more money with the interest on the loan for a car that is losing money. So you're losing more money than you would have if you just paid cash at the end of it.
Yes. Well, it goes back to a principle of money is fungible, and so is debt. So if you're going to finance one thing or another, it's not about essentially what you finance. It's whether or not you are financing. If you shouldn't pay, if a depreciating asset is a bad financial decision, you shouldn't also pay interest on it. You just shouldn't buy it. Don't buy a new car. If you don't want a depreciating asset, buy a six-year-old used one. I mean, it still depreciates some, but not as much. However, and there's also two, like, kind of a dichotomy here. I just said, like, if debt is fungible, it doesn't matter what you finance. But at the same time, you, Tyler, have a view that you shouldn't finance daily drivers, but it's okay to finance toys.
Yes. So I don't want... And this is, again, my personal opinion. We'll see if co-OP finna get dragged for this. I do not want my daily transportation to be hung up in a, like, if something happens, something awful financially happens to me, I don't want to not be able to pay for my required transportation. I have to get groceries. I have to go to work. I have to do X, Y, and Z. So I would like to own my daily transportation. I would then like to stretch, if I'm honest, for toys. The other logic I have with that is I'm not stretching for a brand new Ferrari that's going to depreciate, maybe, but depending on which one you buy, or like a brand new Aston Martin. I'm looking at cars that are 20 years old and have done most, if not all, of their depreciation already, which is where PenFed comes in, because they'll give you a loan for one. But, you know, and that's not to guarantee that the bottom won't fall out and they won't go to zero. There is risk in all of this. But I feel that my personal view has allowed me to mitigate some of the risk while also getting some of the benefit of using somebody else's money that I pay them back over time.
Do you see benefit in terms of having extra money in your savings account or investing that money instead? Or is it just that you straight up can't afford the car?
Oh, 100% the second one. Which is, I think, the other thing, because everybody on the internet, and I'm being straight about this. Like, everybody's like, oh my God, you could invest that money. You could reduce X, Y, and Z.
Well, not at today's interest rates.
Wow, that's true. I'm not trying to say that I'm going to do that instead, because I'm not. I am using a pool of fun cash that I have saved that I just don't have enough of to purchase the thing I want.
Does that not contribute to your anxiety? The fact that you have, like, this thing, this payment hanging out there, this risk of, like, this car could get repoed, or yeah, I could lose my job, whatever. I can't make those payments, and I have to deal with the shame of somebody coming to pick up my Porsche.
So the number of the total loan amount has to be small enough. So there have been a couple of times I'm trying to buy a 996 GT3.
So you say that, but didn't you 100% finance your first 996?
I'm getting there, Doug. I did. So that is one of the things I want to talk about. I have financed two cars through PenFed, not a sponsor, but hey, hit us up.
We don't even have an affiliate link. Stop plugging them.
I financed, so I had just started at my in my career out of college. You know, I was making pretty solid money. I had dreamed of owning a Porsche forever. And I decided that instead of waiting to save up the cash to purchase the car, I went full send and financed the entire purchase price of a 996 in 2017. So I paid $24,000 of somebody else's money. I paid for taxes, transportation, I did all that other stuff I paid for, but the purchase price of the car, I did not.
Did the bank make you get like a special warranty just for the IMS to make sure their collateral was covered?
No, they didn't care. I like talked with them on the phone. They're like, nope, this is per our metrics. The car is worth more than you're paying for it. So I was like, okay.
Okay.
I would not do that again. What's weird is I am more stable now than I was then, but I wouldn't do that again. There's just too much risk. Feels weird.
Well, probably because you've gotten yourself to a point of stability, so you understand what that feels like, and you understand what the real risk is in financing, in being that leveraged.
Well, and like, that car could have blown up a month after I got it. Like, I have put so many wonderful miles on that car, and so far, knock on wood, it has been fantastic. But gosh, that if that car blew up in 2017, I could not have afforded to replace it or fix it.
So that would be our friend John Sabo has a saying, don't pay cash for toys, right? So he would be okay with financing a new car or a daily driver, or leasing it or whatever. But then your toys are your toys. Like, that's extra money. That's not a life cost, yeah. Right? There is an actual cost to owning a vehicle, right? There's just the wear and tear, the use, the gas, the maintenance, et cetera. And people assume, well, part of that's just wrapped up in the payments, right? If you're buying an old car and you have payments on it, there's a saying I heard recently, you're going to have parts, you got payments, but never have parts and payments. Essentially, like, don't finance a car out of warranty, right? So you're kind of going the opposite way and going, oh, yeah, screw it. I'm going to take double risk. I'm going to buy a 996 with IMS and bore scoring issues, and I'm going to 100% finance it, which to me is like, I could not sleep at night.
But what helps me, and I think this does come down to a level of risk comfort, because I'm not trying to say that what I'm doing is smart. It has so far worked for me, and I like to try and mitigate risk as much as I can, while also understanding that if I have the ability to stretch a bit, to achieve something, to get in a vehicle that I would like now, I would like to take the little bit of a risk to try to make it happen, because I have seen so many people in my life, as they have aged, get to the point where they do have the money, where they finally retire, or, you know, it's like the retiree getting his Corvette, like, finally. But it's like, you can't drive stick. Potentially you could have other issues. It's like, I am taking some risk now in spite of all my anxiety to enjoy stuff that I love within reason,
sooner.
But sooner. Yes.
I think so. There's a couple what I believe are misnomers or false beliefs about financing cars that play into this. One is, well, I could never afford it unless I financed it, which is completely false, because you're still paying the same amount for the car itself. 100%. You're paying the same amount of depreciation. You're paying the same amount of wear and tear, of maintenance. In fact, you're paying more because you're paying the bank for the privilege of using their money.
And
but you are still paying for the entire car over time. And don't say, oh, well, I leased my car, so I'm not. Leasing is the most expensive way statistically to own a car, period. I don't care if you say the payments are less, whatever. Because of the structure, the interest rate is higher, and you are taking the most amount of depreciation because you are buying a new car and turning it in after 3 years. Period. It is the most expensive way to own a car. So you can't use the excuse that, oh, well, I can't afford it other than financing. You bought it anyway. You're just paying extra for it.
And that is the way that I view this, that interest money is the cost of having it now versus later. There is additional non-money cost, the stress, the anxiety, the extra monthly payments, yada yada. So it's not just that. Another thing about, before people get crazy, when I took out that $24,000 loan on the 996, the interest rates were wildly different. I paid $800 over 3 years in interest, which is honestly, at that amount of money for a toy, meaningless. That is one service.
Well, but then the problem with that is, right? So in hindsight, yes, mathematically it made sense.
Now it's
the behavior aspect of it is a problem because people will use 0% financing as a justification to go get a loan. The reality is that 0% is usually not 0%, right? The bank doesn't do anything for free. Neither do car dealers. Nope. You are paying for that somewhere else. Often, and I used to work at a new car dealer, and we would get specials. And it was, you can either give them a $5,000 cash rebate or 0% financing. Because the cost of 0% over the course of the loan was $4,000 to $5,000 to the bank. So it's like, well, one or the other. We're just subsidizing the rate. So a 0% loan, if you're buying like, you know, 90 days same as cash, is a complete scam. But if you're buying a car, it's being subsidized. There's no free lunch. It's not really 0%. So like, That's a false narrative, and you can't get hung up on that.
Oh man, if I could get 0% on a loan for a GT3, though, Doug, whoo, let's go.
Well, you take a 10% loan for a GT3. I'm not faulting you for that. I want you to own a GT3, but like, I could never do it. Right? To me, it's, if you can't afford the toy, you don't buy it.
Which I totally respect, and is more. I will admit, I haven't had a car payment for a little bit, and it's really nice. It is so nice to just
Corvette life.
Yeah. I bought a C5, no car. Like, so there is a huge benefit. And if there is a small part of me that looks at the cash I do have available and be like, wow, I could like get something for that and then just have it and like not have to worry about it. So there is, this isn't perfect. It is what has, like I said, it's historically worked for me. What I am the risk I'm willing to take to achieve a potential dream or whatever sooner than just saving up for it. But
And I think that's the mindset though with that is that you can go crazy, right? If you draw a line in the sand and say I'm not financing anything other than a house, you could then say, okay, well, I'm going to take out a loan for this, but I want to preserve my cash, right? I want to buy a house. So I'm going to take out a loan for a wedding. I'm going to take out a loan for GT3. I'm going to take out a loan for the boat. I'm going to do all these things because I don't want to wait. And then people get all caught up and all of a sudden they've got $4,000 a month in payments and all these toys. God,
no. Yeah.
Well, but it starts, right? It's a slippery slope. The mindset of I want a GT3 now, but I don't have the cash. So I'm going to finance it. That mindset then creeps to, I also want this.
You have to be diligent.
What's more diligent than just saying, well, I'm not going to finance?
You have to. The level of diligence I'm talking about, Doug, is not so diligent that you're waiting to have the cash for the GT3.
It's like, I'm only going to have two drinks, but not four.
Exactly. Moderation. Everything in moderation.
Debt in moderation.
But the one thing that I do like is that if with the cars I'm interested in that I would get a loan for, the amount of that purchase price that I would be comfortable paying in a loan over probably 3 years, maybe four, but three is where I like to stick. I can get out of it. I'm never underwater. They are, for the most part, enthusiast cars that people are interested in. So there's a market to offload it if I have to get out of it, if I have some financial strife. There will be a cost. I will not get out of it what I paid, the taxes, you know, everything else. But it is, which is my logic for the toy thing, because I don't need it to get anywhere. I can get rid of it if I have to.
But you take that to the logical extreme and you have like the exotic car hacks mentality. And you have where people buy a car, they finance the crap out of it, and then they don't drive it. They become consumed with the resale value. They buy options that other people like. Like, it's feeding this whole frenzy of, well, I'm using other people's money and it's smart, but also this car's an investment. It's not that it's an investment. It's that I can't afford to lose money on it because then I'll be underwater on my loan.
Well, that's so, where you gotta, like, I don't want to say, like, actual numbers, but, you know, it's a significant amount less than the purchase price of the car.
Okay, fine. That would be like 50% down. I get it. I'm just saying the logical extreme of that mentality is it entraps people, right? If you pay cash for a car, and there's some people, fine, whatever. The mentality can exist no matter what. There's some people that just only buy a car because they think they'll make money on it. But I say that as a car dealer,
I was
right?
Like, what?
Well, but you know, like enthusiast, but it's like, well, I want to buy a car that I can't lose money on. Well, why don't you just buy a car you like and enjoy it? But when you add debt into that equation, you put the pressure on it such that it's like, well, I can't afford to lose money. No, it has to retain its value. And I believe that's a bad place to be.
1,000%. And you do have to be diligent, I think. Moderation in diligence, not full diligence that Doug's talking about. But there have been a couple of situations where I have passed on an opportunity to purchase a car that was like right in front of my face because I ended up not being entirely comfortable with the amount of money that would have been in a loan.
So proud of you.
So that's what I'm saying. It's like there's a line I'm walking. There's the I want a car and boy, do I want to be financially responsible. Sort of. Financially responsible.
Speaking of being financially responsible, there's no better way than to shrewdly negotiate your purchase or sale of your vehicle. And that brings us to the shrewd negotiator of the week, where, oh man, a lot of us could afford this one cash. Kent Lucas submitted this one. It's a 1997 Aston Martin DB7.
Ooh.
The supercharged straight six.
Nice.
Automatic transmission.
Less nice.
Convertible top that
even less nice.
Looks awful when it's down and decent when it's up. All the bad things about DB7. It's not the Vantage. It's not a coupe, not a V12. Anyway, 81,000 miles driven. At least they have a proper asking price. You want to take a guess?
They're asking 15,000.
Yeah, 14
whoa, seriously?
Grand.
Whoa.
So many of these I see out there and they're like 35 grand for an automatic convertible. And I'm like, bro, a V12 coupe manual sold for 40. Like, no, it's worth half that. Anyway, South Carolina, 81,000 miles, asking 14 grand. Vehicle runs good, strong transmission, overall good paint, some spots in clear coat on trunk lid. So not overall good paint, but okay.
Overall except for the
automatic convertible top has some visible repairs. Blah, blah, blah. Handbrake does not engage. Price is OBO. Vehicle can be seen in field by Mike's Garage on Highway 76.
Oh, my. I can't believe we're to the point where DB7s are sitting in fields. That's amazing. That poor car.
I appreciate the honesty, but man, that's not a great start to, hey, I'm interested in this car. Oh, it's parked in a field.
Yeah, also, what visible repairs? God.
Probably going to need more. The mice are getting into it now.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
Came across this article that I figured was right up your alley, Tyler.
Ooh, let's go.
I'm lying. You came across this article.
I was just going to roll
good
with
intro,
it.
Though.
I was going to give you all the credit.
ArsTechnica.com. Millions of Subarus could be remotely unlocked, tracked, due to security flaws. Now, by tracked, we're not talking about taking it on the racetrack. For you car people, this is they can be tracked by a third party.
Does Subaru even have any cars that you like could turn into a track car? I guess the WRX,
yes!
But
come on, you hating? I have my legacy GT wagon on Mid
Ohio.
That's
old.
And the
Subaru.
Las Vegas track and all that. The brakes didn't last more than a couple laps, but
I'm talking about like new Subaru though. They've had plenty of great like sports cars and rally cars and stuff, but now it's a sedan with cladding. You know, Volvo tried to do that with the S60 CC or whatever, and they canceled that after.
If they get any
years.
More plastic cladding, it's gonna like almost be like the old Woody wagons. It's just gonna be like panels on the side. Okay, about a year ago, according to this article, Security researcher Sam Curry bought his mother Subaru on the condition that at some point in the near future, she would let him hack it.
Now,
this takes the mother-son relationship to a whole new level. Hey, son, get out. You know, you got to fly the coop, you know.
My mom would be like, sure, I guess. Like, whatever you want.
When Curry was home for Thanksgiving, he began examining the 2023 Impreza's internet-connected features to start looking for ways to exploit them. So he and a researcher working with him online, Shubham Shah, soon discovered vulnerabilities in a Subaru web portal that let them hijack the ability to unlock the car, honk its horn, and start its ignition, reassigning control of those features to any phone or computer they chose. Okay, so you could, like, wake people up in the middle of the night. Nothing too crazy here yet. However.
Nothing too crazy. Somebody could hack in there and unlock cars in the parking lot and just steal. I guess I could break the window, too, but.
True. I guess if you could start its ignition, in theory, you could get in it and go, although most remote start systems don't allow you to do that. You can start them, but then you have to actually get in, show the key, and, you know, put it in whatever, hit the start button, get button again with the key in proximity to actually drive away. So it's, you know, we don't know based on this article. But most disturbing part, they could also track the Subaru's location, not merely where it was at the moment, but also where it had been for the entire year that his mother had owned it.
Oh, my God.
The map of the car's whereabouts was so accurate and detailed that he was able to see her doctor visits, the homes of the friends she visited, even which exact parking space his mother parked in every time she went to church.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah. Says there are a million scenarios where you could weaponize this against someone. Now, they said that this would have allowed hackers to target any of the company's vehicles equipped with Starlink in the U.S., Canada, or Japan. Vulnerabilities they found in a Subaru website intended for the company's staff allowed them to hijack an employee's account to both reassign control of car Starlink features and also access the vehicle location data available to employees, including the car's location every time its engine started. They reported their findings to Subaru in late November, and Subaru quickly patched up its security flaws on that website. But the researchers warn that these vulnerabilities are just the latest in a long series of similar flaws that could have affected or do affect well over a dozen car makers, Acura, Genesis, Honda, Hyundai, Infiniti, Kia, Toyota, and many others. I remember reading about the Ford patent that allows vehicles to self-repo themselves. So with all this technology comes vulnerability and, well, big brotherness, control, whatever. The other problem is the functionality still is going to exist for Subaru employees, right? So you're buying a car and it is billed as normal functionality that an employee can pull up a year's worth of your location history, according to Curry. So I just bought the newest car we've ever owned. I bought a 2021 Mazda for my wife. And it knows the speed limit everywhere we go, down to like construction zones and stuff. It is up to date. And it weirds me out. It really freaks me out. I do not like it at all. So let's check in with our resident tech expert, Tyler Sanders, to get his take on this.
I am glad that the car I own is now 15 years old, and I hope that it keeps running for a long time. I think you summed it up pretty succinctly. It was something I was going to say as well, that with all of the convenience and with all of the benefits, same thing that we talked about last week, recently with cell phone apps and Allstate and partnering with other companies to track raise your insurance rates or make them more appropriate for the risk at hand or whatever they said. With all of that, the data has to exist somewhere. And if the data exists somewhere, people have access to it. And if people have access to it, there are security flaws, inevitably.
Well, forget the security flaws. People have access to it. You've given people access to it.
And I think what is wild to me is that in today's society, I am more okay with understanding that when I use my phone...
Oh, crap.
Somebody...
Here we are talking about our cars, our phones right here.
I have
doing the, all
like,
this
knows where I'm at. If I'm using Apple Maps or Google Maps to navigate, it obviously has to know where I'm at and where I need to go. And like that data exists. What I don't think people realize, and what I don't agree with, is that when you buy a car, it is also doing that. And who has access to that? At least I know Google or Apple has access to this. Like, what does Subaru or Mazda need to know with any of this data? And why do they need a year of it? That is wild that they need so much of that location data. And I think being... I like technology. Maybe not where technology is at
like
right now.
Kip?
Kip?
You love technology, but not as much as UUC. Always and forever. Always and forever. Napoleon Dynamite?
Oh,
come on.
It's been so long.
Wow.
I being a software developer, there is no way to write perfect software, perfectly secure software, perfectly reliable software. There will be ways around the system. And inherently, when somebody has access, there is a way into the system. So that's where social engineering and comes into play with getting people's information to maybe reset their password or literally anything else that could be involved in a data breach that has happened over the last decade. Somebody has access and that's how it gets out. All we need is for some social engineering to be done on some people that work at any one of these car companies that holds this data, and then suddenly it's out there. What use is it to anybody? I don't know. Probably not good.
Well, okay, so the data itself doesn't concern me as, I should say, a consumer. I'm not a consumer of data. I am a product. I am,
yes,
I am part of the data set. That concerns me less because I'm like, okay, whatever. They're going to try to market things to me. You know, maybe at some point they'll try to regulate my speech based on, you know, what I post places or stuff like that. You know, fact checking, misinformation, whatever. You know, views I may have that the system, the brother, doesn't like. But the thing that concerns me more is the safety issues here, right? Mm. With my phone, it's like, okay, if I don't want it in my bedroom, I can turn it on airplane mode. I can put it out in the kitchen or whatever. It's taking data, but if I don't want to take it with me, I don't take it with me. A car is a way bigger deal, right? So in this article, they point out some of the vulnerabilities, not of the data, but of the access to control your vehicle, right? A hacker could have targeted a victim for stalking or theft, find their location, and unlock their car while they're in it.
Oh, terrifying.
Or a thief could then disable the car's immobilizer and take the car or just get into the car without the alarm going off. Like that becomes a real safety issue. I don't know of anyone that's trying to kidnap me through my phone.
Yeah. And that's where, and again, like you said, you can leave your phone at home. When you need to go somewhere, you have to use your car. So there's no way to not have your car with you. Now, I don't know if there's a fuse you can pull to turn this system off. I think on some modern, I don't know, there is a manufacturer that has like a black box in it that you can disconnect pretty easily to turn off all this kind of stuff. And it's under the guise of, you know, emergency assistance and all this other stuff that you may need.
I don't know how to drive assistance.
Yeah. Well, and that's like, as I get older, I'm still very young, but as I get older, I'm just like, I just want my car to be a car. I don't need it to be a computer. I don't need it to be all this other stuff. I just need it to be a car. And what sucks is that I'm going to guess what the future looks like. There needs to be more security measures in place to prevent against things like this, which means more people need to be paid to develop those security measures, to enforce them, to keep them in place, which means it's another component of the car that has nothing to do with it going down the road that costs money.
They would say that it has everything to do with it going
down
the road because it's keeping you in your lane and making sure you're going the speed limit and reminding you to stay awake and put on your seatbelt and all these wonderful things that are for our safety but invade our privacy.
And then we end up like the people in Wall-E, just sitting in chairs with big old gulpies and not knowing how to do anything. God, I hate it.
What if, conspiracy theory here, Cash for Clunkers had massive ripple effects on the economics of cars and just, you know, the middle and lower middle class in America? The prices of used cars are insane now. What if there's like another Cash for Clunkers type thing where it's like, well, we need to get all the old cars that don't have this electronic data tracking systems in them off the road, or some legislation where it's like, you know, like child seats, right? Child seats are the craziest thing on the planet. I don't know exactly how it works, but it's essentially like, if you don't have your kid in a properly rated, up-to-date child seat, then you can be like prosecuted for child endangerment or whatever. Sheesh. Like, it's crazy. I don't think that's actually the case, but there's laws governing this, right? You can't have a three-year-old child seat, and they're changing the safety rules and standards every couple of years. So it's like, you got to keep up with this, buy these fancy brand new child seats. However, you could put a fancy brand new child seat in a 30-year-old car with no airbags and no crumple zones. Is that child endangerment? No. But at what point is it going to become like, oh, well, you can't make your own decision about safety, so we have to get these cars off the road. So we're going to pass retroactive laws that any car on the road has to have certain things, whether it's three-point seatbelts and airbags, or it's, you know, vehicle tracking system, lane change assist, automatic emergency braking procedures. I'm going full conspiracy theory here.
I will choose to feel like the people, the amount of people on the road driving such old vehicles is small enough that it doesn't really statistically make a difference, but I don't know.
But that's the problem. We're small enough that we can't protest.
Yeah, I guess.
We're a small enough group that we'll have
just
no
chance.
Just
leave us car people alone.
Okay. Speaking of oversight, government oversight, and regulation, let's look at license plates, vanity license plates, where people pay the government to put a message on their car to signal to, not virtue signal, but to signal to other people some sort of vain things about themselves. And the game is that we read off a vanity license plate and the other person has to guess not what it means, but what car it's on. So how good are we at stereotypes?
We might be getting worse. My favorite, though, are the vanity plates that say just what the car is. I saw one that said green Z3, and I'm like, no, oh my God, like a foot above that, there's a Z3 badge and the car's green.
I think there should be a rule. If I was the ruler of the world, it has to either be funny or a pun. If you like put your initials on it or just like some thing about yourself, unless it's a play on words or a pun or something like that, it should be outlawed. It's got to be, they have to be like for the greater good.
Well, I love the people that get something that is just entirely like meaningless, which is probably what mine seemed like to other people. But it's like, you paid money for this. Like, you paid twice as much to get this plate.
Mom,
at least in
and
Ohio.
Dad.
Yeah. It's like, or
no
gift.
Kidding.
And it's like, wow. Okay.
All right. Let's see. We are getting blown up with submissions on these. We love it, but apology in advance, we can't get to all of them, so we'll do our best. There we go. Speaking of double X, Tyler is pouring himself a, what is that?
That's some Glenfiddich.
Project Double X. Well, that fits into my first license plate submitted by Eric from California, and it's Botox, but spelled with double X. B-O-T-O-X-X. Botox.
So there's two things. That's either somebody who is a Botox enthusiast, which
they
case it's
love
probably a Tesla. But it also could be a doctor who's making a bunch of money doing Botox, in which case it's an S-Class.
Neither.
Ah.
042. Ugh. Probably is a doctor. Well, I don't know. People that love Botox have to have money to spend on it, but it is a Porsche 992 Cabriolet.
Oh, that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense, especially in California. They got the permagrin and the permatan top down in California.
All right. So for you, I have Cafe Car, C-A-F-E-C-R.
Or is it Cafe CR? Is it a Honda S2000 CR?
No. Do you want another
trying
guess?
To be fancy there. Cafe Car. Like they go to lunch in it?
I'm not giving you any hints.
I don't know. I think of cafe and I think of cafe racers, like the motorcycles. Yeah. I can't get that out of my head. I don't know what a cafe car is.
A Suzuki Cappuccino.
Oh, dang it.
So good.
That's so obvious now that I see it.
Thanks. Thanks to Corner Exit on Instagram for that.
Darn it. That totally was worth a good it. One.
Do I even need to do any more? I'm done.
Shoot. Woo. All right. My Pirate Life at its best on Instagram sent me this one. Apparently he's a one-legged Joel Osteen fan. What? I'll give you a minute for that one. Joel Osteen is a health, wealth, and whatever preacher. What is that called?
A televangelist?
Prosperity Gospel. Yeah, he's a Prosperity Gospel guy who wrote My Best Life Now. Gotcha. But if you're a pirate, your best life now, one leg. Anyway.
What's okay. the plate?
The plate. Cup O' Joe.
Cup O' Joe. Oh, okay. So it's coffee related. They are probably a coffee
it's
enthusiast.
It's not a Suzuki Cappuccino.
That'd be amazing. This is going to be a Land Rover Discovery.
No.
Toyota 4Runner.
No.
All right, I give up.
It's nothing Bailey Walton owns.
Okay, I did think that's...
Well, he has owned one of these, actually. I shouldn't say that. An older one. It is a final generation Lotus Esprit V8.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice. I don't Very understand nice. How that plate is relevant, but love it.
Maybe if it's like, well, I drive this car in the morning and I don't need caffeine because this is my caffeine. Nice. Maybe.
I like it. I have banana for you with the two first A's are fours. So
somebody else had banana and he had to.
Yeah.
All I can think of is this Hyundai like two-door hatchback. But honestly, it looks more like a lemon than anything that we sold once. It was yellow and we called it a banana. Or I don't know. Maybe we called it the lemon. That's stuck in my head. Banana. I feel like it is a yellow Mercedes AMG GT.
Oh, I like the guess.
Because that is kind of banana-ish.
I like the guess. It is a bright yellow Corvette C5 from C5 Hack on Instagram. I didn't want to tell you the name beforehand because I would have. It was a little too close.
All right, from Don Marconi. I love this one. Self did.
Gallardo.
No.
Do you see where I'm going with that, though?
I'd see where you're going with it.
Am
you
I barking up the right tree?
No.
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 No. Try again. Self-did. Come on. Think. Who would use that kind of terminology?
This is going to be a Jeep Cherokee.
No.
What is it?
It's not a realtor. It's a Nissan Maxima.
Oh, nice.
He said he thinks it's the Walmart version of self-made.
Amazing.
Like, You're no longer in an Altima. You made it. You're in a Maxima.
To the Maxim. Is Snek. I-S-S-N-E-K. Or is it Snake?
What?
Is Snake.
I don't know. I don't know what it means.
It's a GT Shelby GT 500.
Oh, that's dumb. Is Snake?
Is Snake. Yeah, it's a snake.
I-S-S-N-E-K?
Yeah, Snack is like an internet, I don't even know what to call it, but people will spell snake like snack on the internet.
Okay. I'm 40, so that's...
So sorry. Thank you.
I don't get that at all.
Lucky Rabbit Auto Works. I like it.
Is snack. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Next. That's... If I understood it, that would have been been funny, but I see the clues there. It's just Sneck is okay. From Michael Cicerone, I can't pronounce Italian last names. Mr. Bang.
Okay. Mr. Bang. This is an Aston Martin.
On the right track.
Oh, really?
On the right track.
All right, what is it? I'm close enough. I'm not going to guess.
Bright purple Rolls-Royce Ghost.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And he said something effective. His personality matches what you would expect with the plate.
My next one is really slow. R-L-Y-S-L-O.
Mazda Miata. Because it's a momentum car.
Kind of, sort of barking up the right tree.
Yeah.
That is an Iron Duke Fiero.
that's not even a momentum car. That is just slow. Just slow. Yes, but it could be a Lamborghini Countach kit car in its future.
That is also really slow.
Sure.
All right. Has aspirations.
Last one I got from the ever awesome Vanity of Maine Instagram page. It's a twofer.
I need to unfollow this page.
The one on the left is pimping.
Oh, that's not a Rolls Royce up in Maine, I don't think.
Nope. What do you think it is?
Chrysler 300.
What the? Well, no. Yes, sorry. Chrysler Sebring.
Oh.
It's a convertible, man.
300,
it's
like, okay.
Yeah, that is pimping. But I'll give you the Chrysler. The second plate that they have, can you guess what it is?
Oh, no, I have no idea.
It's Ain't Easy.
What's that on?
Guess.
Ooh, that one is a like a Dodge Durango, like an SUV.
Man, you're darn close. Right track.
So close.
It is a like late 90s Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah, that's what they needed, like a bigger car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whew. I'm so close. I keep flirting with the right answer on a lot of these. The last one from me, tax fraud. T-A-X-F-R-D.
Is it a Montana plate?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't remember.
I feel like that's on a big body luxury car. Either Mercedes S-Class, or it's a car that you get like a tax write-off for buying. Like a 6,000-pound, maybe it's like a Range Rover, because they're totally getting the accelerated depreciation for a car that's definitely not a work vehicle. That's my answer.
It's a Corvette C8.
Lame! Dumb. At least
on
have
Alaska
some
plates,
connection.
Which is
no, that's it. Okay, fine. I said Montana. Alaska is where people also do the LLCs in order, because there's no sales tax in Alaska.
Oh.
So I was on the right track.
Okay.
I didn't even know that. Reason for it. Yeah, Montana and Alaska is where people title their cars to avoid sales tax. I wouldn't call it out on my plate, because if you ever get in trouble for it, it's like, did you know what you were doing? No, I didn't.
I had no idea.
Well, your plate here...
This evidence you paid for.
This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. We hear sayings all the time about buying cars. And probably the one we hear the most about homes is that renting is throwing money away, right? So you say, oh, build home equity. I'm like, dude, I pay property taxes and maintenance. Home equity is a myth. What are the myths that we hear that are perpetuated within the car industry, especially maybe by dealers or by well-meaning friends, that we want to either confirm as true or debunk? I guess it wouldn't be myths if we confirm them as true, well, but yeah, common saying.
Car myth number one, though, is that Switch Cars isn't the best place to buy your exotic car. Or maybe at some point this spring, a 1998 Corvette pace car.
Yes.
No, oh,
we're,
gosh.
We're at least the best place in Twinsburg.
Yeah. Maybe. There's somewhere down the road that seems pretty nice, but I think they might technically be in Macedonia.
Oh, Harwood Motors. Yeah, they're 300 feet down the road, but they're in Macedonia. So yeah. We're the best in Twinsburg.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start off with a good one. Used cars are all lemons, so you should buy a new car. Not true.
Also, to be a lemon, doesn't it have to be like a new car by definition?
Yes, by definition, a lemon is a brand new car, but that term gets appropriated to used cars. Well, here's one for you. As soon as you drive the car off the lot, what is it?
Worthless.
No.
Like 40% lower in, but no,
used.
Oh,
it's used. So if used cars are all lemons, oh, I'll buy a new car. It'll be fine. Well, okay. Now it's used. So yeah.
Taking off the lot, turn around, come back in.
Yes. Yes. In that same vein, here's one I've heard a lot. If you buy a used car, you're just buying someone else's problem.
Oh, I have heard that so much. I don't get, not everybody's trying to sell a car because it's a problem.
Yeah. And
some people are. Some shysters, maybe.
Yeah. What about used houses?
Honestly, I have heard those are so much more of a problem.
Exactly. We have no problem buying used houses.
Yeah.
And yet, holy crap, the foundation could be cracked. It needs a new roof. It needs new windows, new furnace, new HVAC. Like, that's five cars right there.
Oh.
Like, okay, fine. You might be buying somebody else's problem in a used car. Like, so fix it.
It's a smaller problem.
Or buy a warranty with a used car, right? Like, they're way better than home warranties. Yeah, I think that comes from a misunderstanding of used cars, really. I mean, some people think of it in a more of a, like, that person didn't maintain it or take care of it the way I think they should. I don't know how they took care of it. And if I buy a new car, I know exactly how it was cared for because I'm caring for it. I can get that. But I think a lot of people think of it like, well, people would only be unloading this if they're trying to get rid of a problem. If it wasn't a bad car, then they would just keep it.
Which isn't necessarily true. Like, I love my Corvette, but I'm going to sell it. Like,
yeah,
because there's other things I'm interested in doing with the money that is currently tied up. Some of the money that's tied up in that car.
Okay, but that's a fun car. Let's talk about like daily drivers.
You could want a new one. That could maybe something about that car just didn't jive with you.
Yeah.
And you're ready to try something else.
I will fully admit that when we sold my wife's wagon, it was because we couldn't solve a problem and we were tired of it.
You're one of those.
No, I got tired of it. But that is one of the only cars I've ever sold that was for that reason. Almost every other one is I have a different life situation or I have different needs. So, or I have a greater level of wealth or a lesser level of wealth. I went broke or whatever. So there's a great response comes from one of my favorite podcasts that says...
Switchcast?
No. That buying a new car is also buying somebody else's problem. You're buying the dealer's problem or manufacturer's problem, because if you don't buy it, it's going to depreciate. So you're taking the depreciation problem off their hands.
Do you think a lot of these myths that get perpetuated about it being a problem, or, oh my God, why wouldn't you just keep it, are because cars are such a large expense and such a infrequent thing for the vast majority of people that it seems like, well, I can't imagine why you'd go through this whole process again. I can't imagine why you'd put out all that money or whatever. Like, it's not for you, since you run a car dealer. You're doing it all the time. You're moving cars, transacting. It's a part of business. It's a part of life. But for me, I don't do that all the time.
Sure.
Stressful.
I get it. Yeah, no, that's a very valid perspective and kind of understanding of people that don't have my experience or even my ADD, where it's normal even on a personal car to be like, well, I kept it 2 years. That's a long time.
Yeah, like, next thing.
And people who... have a concern about multiple owner cars, a lot of them come from a mentality of, well, my last car I kept for 20 years. Why would anyone sell a car that they love? So if it has five owners, that must be a problem. So I do understand that kind of mentality, but it is missing the simple fact that everybody thinks differently about car ownership, and people's life scenarios change all the time.
For sure. Tastes
you have
change.
Kids. Your kids grow up and go to college. You get a dog. You this, you that. You move north and you need four-wheel drive all of a sudden. Let's see. Here's a great one. There's no savings in late model used cars, so you should just buy new. Because, like, a two-year-old car is essentially the same price, so just buy a new car.
Are they, though? Whenever I've looked, they're very much not.
It depends.
Okay.
That's a very much it depends, right? So there's a strategy at play. There's data, right? So let's think about, like, Toyotas. Toyotas don't depreciate nearly what the average car depreciates, right? So stats. The average new car loses half its value in the first 3 years. But average happens because some are more than average and some are less than average. American cars skew that number on the bad side, right? They probably lose 60 to 70% of their value in the first 3 years for, like, a Chevy Malibu or something like that. Toyotas, Hondas, they're on the other side of things. They might lose 20, 25% of their value in that same time frame. So within certain brands, that might be close to true. I actually bought a brand new Volkswagen Touareg in 2014 because I was seeing that same phenomenon. It was like 2-year-old car, 1-year-old car with 20,000 miles for $5,000 less than new. And I was like, I'm just going to get new. Mm. Part of what played into that, though, is that body style had only been out for a couple years. So it was still kind of new and popular. And I was looking for a TDI diesel, and those were kind of rare. So they really weren't depreciating. However, even though they quote unquote didn't depreciate, boy, did it depreciate. Because when I sold it 4 years later, I think I paid $50,000 for it new. I sold it for $20,000. So I lost over 60% of the value in 4 years. So it's still, still depreciation still happened. But there's a strategy I think at play as well, is new car dealers will buy used ones, CPO them, stock them, and then price them really, really close to new cars so that people will then buy new cars.
Yeah. Well, and I think, right? CPO has also taken on this, like, magical aura of, like, oh, it's just like new. You have a warranty. Everything's great. Like, people seem to forget that it's still a used car, and these inspections could be good. They could be bad. Somebody could miss something. Like, you don't really know. I think... having a CPO warranty could be great, but I don't think it's like a magic bullet.
Well, that brings us to the next possible myth to debunk. CPO, which stands for Certified Pre-Owned, means that a car is good, right? They sell it, you get peace of mind. I used to work at a Land Rover store. We sold CPO Land Rover Discoveries. In that scenario, I would never not buy one that wasn't CPO because it essentially just extended the factory warranty. And I'm like, every Discovery got traded in at the 4-year mark with 48,000 miles. Because guess when the warranty expired? 50K. Like, literally, you go online, you search for Land Rover Discoveries. It's like 48,000 miles, 49,000 miles, 47,000. It was like clockwork. Anyway, yes and no, right? So it depends on the manufacturer. It depends on what their requirements are for CPO. We recently bought a certified pre-owned Mazda CX-9. Mm-hmm. CPO in that case didn't mean a whole lot, right? Wiper blades had to be replaced or up to spec. I think tires had to be within spec. But other than that, it really wasn't like the oil, the maintenance couldn't be deferred. But they didn't even do an oil change as part of the CPO because like a month after we bought it, we got the reminder that an oil change was due. So we took it in for an oil change. Now it's complimentary, but I'm like, wait a minute. I'm thinking like luxury car CPO is like everything is done. Like,
yeah.
Everything has to be up to spec. And if it wasn't done, it has to be done fresh. Tires have to be within a certain age and tread depth, like, you know, brake pads, all the fluids, brake fluid, gearbox fluid, et cetera, all that stuff. Spark plugs can't be more than a certain age old. But essentially, when I got into it, I was like, okay, CPO on a Mazda basically means like it passed a basic safety inspection, kind of.
Yeah.
And there's no gross deferred maintenance. I'm happy with the warranty. And the warranty,
I'm sure that's
good.
Why you got it, is like for that additional warranty.
It was like $500. It wasn't like $4,000 extra where I could just self-insure on a pretty reliable late model car anyway. But on Porsches or any high-end cars, I think it people get a false sense of security that CPO somehow means like this car has lived a good life.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that. In fact, with regards to paintwork, Porsche's CPO guidelines say that it cannot have, now I'm going backwards on this. It cannot have more than a certain number of panels painted, but that does not include the hood. So if you take it to its logical extreme, the entire car could have been repainted as long as one fender and one door are original paint. That qualifies as CPO.
Wow. And it's like, what had to happen to require such a repaint or,
right,
you know, whatever else, if it wasn't just a color change.
So 80% of the car could be repainted and it could have been a track whore its entire life. And I say that because I've seen these cars getting CPO. They were modded all to crap and the dealer just basically put everything back to stock and brought it up to spec at that moment. Didn't mean that it had lived a good life. It just means as of this date, it passes these check marks.
And I think if you understand a CPO as that, you're good. Because then there's the benefits of the additional warranty that is usually backed by the manufacturer and you can take it to a dealer network and everything else. That's huge.
Can be huge. Yeah, depending on the car. Yep, for sure. Land Rover. here's one. You'll never be without a car payment.
Let me tell you.
I'd say that's true if you continue to buy new cars over and over again every 5 years. Yeah.
Like 5,000 miles.
You never get out of the cycle, then you'll never be without a car payment.
Mm. Oh, never be without. I was thinking, maybe I should lay off the sauce a little bit.
No, like you'll never not have a car payment. You can never escape that cycle. So
it's very easy.
Just embrace it.
Nah. Very easy for dailies. very easy. Let's not, but you can. I think to our other discussion point, when you get trapped in the system, it's hard to get out. You're like, oh, well, I need something. This car is pretty old to put a bunch of miles on. I might as well just get a new one. I'm used to this $500 a month payment. Why would I, you know, need to be without it or whatever? So you get it. It's mind games.
Here's a hot take in response to that statement.
Uh-oh.
You'll never retire. If you believe this.
so
If you give all your money to the dealers and the manufacturers over the course of your life for depreciating daily drivers, then that money would have been way better invested, and you could drive cheap cars and retire well. Let's see. Buying a Toyota or Honda means you won't have maintenance expenses.
We know two people, Dan and Bailey, who will tell you that is wrong.
Oh, my mother-in-law had she had a late model Camry hybrid, and the hybrid one time the hybrid engine went kaput and somehow took the regular engine with it.
Nice.
And that was after the engine had already been replaced. Oh, so she went through two engines in a Camry hybrid.
Whoa.
And another friend of mine had a 2007 Toyota Camry, which suffered from oil consumption.
Oh.
So, like, again, bad engine. Another friend of mine, Honda Odyssey, they had the 2013, which suffered from the blow-by from the piston ring. So there was getting oil in the upper end of the engine. It was fouling out the plugs. It basically had to rebuild the entire top end of the engine. It was a super common issue. I think the new Toyota Tundras are all getting recalled.
Yeah, some engines. New Toyota, I think, one of the, has one an engine problem. It is a car. It will break. You will have to fix things.
Sure. But I think my response to that, it would not be just kind of a fatalistic thing. It would be more of some are good, some aren't. Yeah, buying a Toyota doesn't mean you can throw out your due diligence and not do any research to find out if this is a good one or a bad one. There's plenty of them that will go forever.
Yeah, for sure.
Lexus LS400.
I should get one of those.
500,000 miles. No problem. This is one of our favorite ones. Sports cars only have back seats for insurance purposes.
What are you? You tell me that doesn't work? You tell me when I tell my insurance agent that, oh, it's got back seats, don't worry, then he doesn't care? That's what?
I've heard it that, like, they wouldn't be able to import them unless they put back seats in.
What about the Corvette? It's never had back seats.
I just special laws for European cars, different safety ratings. Or the manufacturers did that. So I don't know. I've heard this so many times, and I'm like, people have children and they want to share their fun cars with their kids.
Or they just have stuff. It is much better to road trip my 911 than it is my Corvette, because all my like snacks and crap I can't keep behind me. It's important things.
I thought you were talking about like luggage space. No, it's the snacks.
No, the luggage space
arm's reach
in the Corvette is amazing. It just gets hot because the
that
transmission.
Is true. The transaxle, yeah.
No ice cream back there, but
yep. Wait, is a Corvette a transaxle car, or does a rear diff get that hot?
No, it's transaxle.
Okay, I was...
It's all the performance stuff.
For a second there. That's why it's perfect weight distribution. oh, my goodness. the age-old red cars cost more to insure and get more tickets.
Oh my gosh, the amount of people too, when I told them I was considering being open to a yellow car, we're like, oh, it's going to be so bright, you're going to get pulled over so often. Like, what?
No, people get pulled over for tinted windows and expired plates. It's not because your car is red. That myth has been debunked over and over again. Insurance companies do not rate cars based on their color. They rate them based on their safety rating and the odds of parts getting stolen off of them and parts replacement costs and average medical costs in an accident and things like that. Not based on the color. I'm not sure if they even asked me the color of my cars.
I don't think I was ever asked.
No. No.
Just give me the VIN. That's all they really care about.
I've gotten a lot of tickets in silver and black and white cars. So, yep. All right, time now for the props and flops.
As always, the props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. And as you know, Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. For more information, you can head over to switchcars.com or you can come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, let us know, what is the pick of the week?
2013 Corvette Grand Sport, black over black, automatic.
We're not off to a good start.
Which I don't love, but the C6 wide bodies are so good looking.
Yes.
And it has an LS3, yes. One of the best, in my opinion, variants of the LS engines. But it's not the best LS3 variant because all the manual GS Coupe got the LS3 with forged crankshaft and dry sump.
But the autos didn't,
and the convertibles didn't, which bums me out, because if I was ever to get rid of my beloved C5, I would get either a 427 or a Grand Sport manual convertible. So, but I wouldn't have a forged crankshaft. All right, our flop of the week, speaking about Corvettes, apparently nobody listened to our podcast, or if they did, they don't give a crap about our opinion on, or my opinion on why low-mileage cars are ridiculous, because just last week, a base Corvette C6 with 65 miles sold at Barrett Jackson for $330,000.
What?
Yes.
Are you?
It has the LS3, though.
Why?
I don't know. Wasn't a charity auction. I don't get it. $300,000 freaking dollars. The crazy thing is, though, the same collector's C6 Z06 sold for less than half that with delivery miles, and his delivery mile C4 ZR1s sold for $115,000 and $82,000. So I don't know what was pumped into the room when that auction was going off, but
I can't imagine spending $80,000 on a C4 unless it was like some ZR1. Really, really
I totally
special
could
stuff.
Spend $82,000 on a ZR1 versus $300,000 for a base C6. They made like $300,000 of them. Maybe that's it. Maybe they made $330,000 of them. So he's like, I'll just pay a dollar for everyone that existed.
I want to put it on my boomer board.
Yikes. Oh gosh!
All right, get us out of this.
And the crazy thing is, though, Corvette people. Think this is okay, but they'll complain about the new ZR1 selling for $50,000 over sticker because that's, you know, greed and, you know, whatever. Yeah. All right. On the same track here, prop of the week, Rick Hendrick at Barrett Jackson paid $3.7 million for the first Corvette C8 ZR1, VIN number 001.
What?
Is this ridiculous?
Yes.
No. Oh. It was for charity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there you go. So all auction fees were waived, and 100% of the proceeds go to the American Red Cross. Now, it's not true altruism here, as, of course, Hendrick's name gets out there in the news. We're talking about it. And undoubtedly, it's not just a boost to his personal ego, but also incredible marketing for his dealer network and probably an incredible tax write-off for somebody in the mix here. But we will congratulate this type of marketing versus the alternative, like a dealer being in the news for getting fined by the FTC. So
this is much more fun.
Exactly. $3.7 million, chump change, and you know, everybody feels good and looks good.
I would like to add a prop if I can.
Okay.
At the last moment, I love that the Mustang GT3, which is a new race car that Ford with Multimatic has put out after the Ford GT program a few years ago, has won its first race. They won in class at the 24 Hours of Daytona recently. So I think it's fantastic.
Excellent.
To see a Mustang with Ferraris and Corvettes and Porsches and Mercedes, you know, kicking some bum on the racetrack. It's good.
Heck yes. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.